everyone, and welcome to Alzheimer Speaks Radio. I'm your host, Lori LeBay, the founder of Alzheimer Speaks, and also a daughter of a mother who lived with dementia for 30 years. So I get the frustration, the guilt, the isolation, the exhaustion, and all that comes with dementia. And luckily, I was able to find that other side, the joy, the purpose, the passion, the intimacy in terms of learning to communicate differently as the disease progressed. Our goal here is to raise everyone's voice all around the world and to shift our dementia care from crisis to comfort. And I hope you will join us and help spread the word by liking, clicking, sharing these links, because there are so many people in your own spheres of influence that are most likely dealing with this that you don't even know about. And the more information we can get to them, the more they can see how many people are dealing with this, the easier their journey is going to be. So I'm so glad that you've taken the time to join us today. We, like I said, are all about raising voices. And so you as a listener could easily be our next guest. Maybe you are having symptoms or have been formally diagnosed. Maybe you are a family member caring for a loved one or a friend, or a business professional that is providing services to both those diagnosed and families. Maybe you're an author, a singer, a songwriter, a researcher, an advocate. Everyone's voice is welcome. As long as we have a respectful conversation, we are off to the races. We also can help businesses expand their brand footprint by leveraging all of our different platforms. You see, the radio isn't the only thing we do. We have a blog, we have a YouTube channel. We do a thing called Dementia Chats, where I facilitate a conversation with people living with dementia, and they tell us what they feel and see and the changes that they would like to occur and the supports they would like to have for both themselves and their friends and families dealing with this. So think about that. Think about your own story. We each have one, and we would love to be able to share it with the world. So just reach out to me. Go to alzheimerspeaks.com. There's a big contact button in the upper right-hand corner. Now, before I introduce our guest today, I want to give a shout out, because not everybody knows about Alzheimer's Disease International, and they put out a world report every year, and that is now available. And you can access that by just going to our main website, alzheimerspeaks.com. You can also access, and there's not much time left on this, the World Dementia Council is doing a survey on what are you doing that is dementia friendly. They're trying to get information in terms of research studies, but they also know that a lot of people don't have the money to do the research. So they want to find out what is working and what do we need to push forward there. The Memory Cafe Directory, I would be amiss if I didn't mention that. Powerful, powerful group of like-minded people on a like-minded journey, and it's for people with dementia and their care partners. You'll laugh, you'll cry together, support one another, and really bond quite heavily in these groups. Just go to memorycafedirectory.com and you can find where there is a cafe in your location. The U.S. now has over 800 of these, and I'm so proud of that number, and it's growing every single month. Dave, who puts this directory together, is also putting together locations for other countries as well. And then, of course, I want to give a shout out to Stall Catchers. This is where we as individuals can play a game and actually diagnose real Alzheimer's data. So just go to stallcatchers.com for that one. And what else can I say? I have to thank Artist Senior Living for sponsoring me, going to a few events with them this month, and Deep Haven Woods of Minnetonka, and also the Trails of Orono. We just had some wonderful events, and next month I will be heading out to Massachusetts in Reading and Lexington, November 13th. And 15th. So if you're in those areas or know of somebody, please come out and see me. And then November 20th through the 23rd, I am going to be down with the East Alabama area on aging with Alabama Cares, which will just be a very fun time too. So today we are going to be talking with a grandson who has put a new twist on how to find out history about your loved one and how to build a relationship when you're dealing with dementia. And so we have Alex Leff with us, and he is the director of Now and Again, which is an upcoming documentary about his grandfather's struggle with Alzheimer's and also his adventure with his brother to go and find their grandfather's lost memory. And he's going to tell us about that today. So I'm really excited to have you with us, Alex. How are you doing today?
Hi, Ori. Thanks so much for having me. I'm doing good.
Well, good. And where are you located, Alex?
I'm currently located in L.A. I grew up in Philadelphia and spent a lot of time in my Northeast, but about a year ago moved out here. So far from home, very different weather than I'm used to, but a little warmer,
okay.
So that's kind of nice.
Well, hopefully you're staying away from the fires and the mudslides that they have out there, and it's just, a very different climate that you're dealing with, but it's gorgeous out there. I absolutely adore California. Well, why don't, I mentioned that your grandfather had dementia. Can you tell us a little bit more about, and is he the only one, I should ask, in your family that has had dementia that you've had to deal with?
Yeah. So I was very close to my grandparents as a little kid and still am today. Spent a lot of time with Grandpa Mel, listening to his stories, just playing with him. We would play a lot of checkers, and he would always whistle as he was moving the pieces down the board very playfully with me. We would make fires in the fireplace and build these castles out of cardboard and watch them burn down. So he was always very playful, would wrestle with us on the couch. And as I got a little older, was able to listen to the stories from his life, and which always fascinated me that he was able to live, 70 years before I was even born. And all of these events and things that I could only hear about in history textbooks or from my teachers that he had lived through and had his own experiences with. So even at the age of 10 or 12 years old, I just loved listening to him sharing his stories. And around the time I was becoming a teenager was when he was diagnosed with dementia and Alzheimer's. And I could, watch firsthand those stories that had been so important to him kind of becoming fuzzier and fuzzier, and him mixing up details that I was starting to know better than him because I had, listened so attentively for all these years. And we had had other family members in the past. My great-grandfather, who I was able to know as a little bit as a little kid, also had Alzheimer's. So I had some experience with that, but to have it be to my grandpa, who I was so close to, and the decline was so slow and subtle, really, it hit home for me about how precious our memories are and how fragile they can be.
Isn't that the truth? Isn't that the truth? My daughter only knew her grandma with dementia, and they were like two peas in a pod. They were extremely close. So I love to hear that you have this great relationship, with your grandpa. Why were you moved to make the film? What was there a tipping point for you that just said, cannot not do this?
Yeah, I had, have worked on documentary films in the past and studied documentary film at school. And I was just about to graduate college and kind of was just thinking on what was the next story that I wanted to focus on. And, whatever film you're going to work on is going to take up about, 4 to 5 years of your life. And so I wanted to make sure that it was something that was very close to me, meant a lot to me. And at the same time, this was when Grandpa Mel finally moved into a nursing home. And my grandmother, who has been together for over 60 years, had been his primary caregiver, needed the assistance and needed the help. And at this point, Grandpa Mel's memories were all but lost, and I felt, you know, I was really losing my connection with him, and wanted to figure out a way to hold on to that. One of the stories that he told me, maybe more than any other story that stood out the most from his life and his childhood, was this bicycle adventure he went on when he was just 16 with his best friend. And they rode from like the Depression era Brooklyn all the way to the city of Philadelphia. And, you know, this is the kind of story that like he would tell me again and again and again. And I'm sure some of the details became a little larger than life. And as a little kid, that always inspired me, that just that sense of adventure and all of the details of putting together an adventure like that and just going out on your bikes away from your parents and getting that sense of independence. And my brother and I, my brother Kobe is a couple years younger than me, both rode our bikes a lot and did long trips together, kind of inspired by Grandpa Mel. We once like rode our bikes out for a couple weeks through Colorado and Wyoming. So I was thinking, wouldn't it be an interesting way to hold on to my connection with him to recreate that bike trip that I had heard so much about that now he couldn't remember, from his childhood home of Brooklyn to where we coincidentally ended up growing up in Philadelphia. So that was the idea about 4 years ago. And as I predicted, it's, you know, ended up taking a long time, but something that still has been very important and special to me.
Oh, neat. So, so you went to college and you were in the film industry to begin with, and you know you've got this close relationship with your grandfather. Was your brother as close with your grandfather as well?
What's interesting is that Kobe, just being a few years younger than me, does not have memories of Grandpa before the Alzheimer's. And that's mm-hmm. a big difference for us. And as you're talking about your daughter, you know, still able to have a very close connection with her grandma, which is wonderful. And I think Kobe had that too, but there's a difference to, I was able to, as Kobe says in the film, as we're talking about why going on this trip, and he's sharing how he doesn't have memories of Grandpa before Alzheimer's. He says to me, you know, maybe you're looking for something you had, whereas I'm looking for something I never had, finding mm-hmm. something that I never got to witness.
Mhm. Yeah. Oh, interesting. So when you decided, you know, the two of you, you know, kind of mulled this over, what did the rest of your family think about this venture?
Yeah, we're very close with my grandma, Grammy Connie, as we call her. And she is an artist in her own right. And so she kind of played an integral role just separately from me making this film. You know, she always talked about how when they met as camp counselors at the age of 19, back at Camp Wellmatt in New York, you know, this was the main story that Mel was telling her as they were just connecting. And so she still had the photographs from 1945 of this bike trip. And she created a collage, an art piece with these different old photographs of the different parts of the trip. And that was at the same time as when I was thinking about recreating it. So we talked a lot about, you know, where would these places be? How would we find them today? There's just tiny little clues that written in Mel's handwriting as a teenager on the back of the photos about, like, you know, on our way to Perth Amboy, New Jersey. And then just different abstract things in the photo that can maybe give us a hint of, you know, where those places could be today. And ultimately, as I was, you know, the year leading up to actually going on the bike trip, which we filmed and we're now editing, I spent a lot of time with my grandma interviewing her about her experience being a caregiver for so long and what it was like to, you know, lose her life partner that she's been with since she was 19. Also tracking down my grandpa's childhood friend and lifelong friend, George, who had gone on that bike trip with him as a 16-year-old and visiting him in Buffalo, New York. And what was really special is that, you know, I had never gotten a chance to really talk to my grandfather as an adult. So I knew what he was like as a grandfather, but not fully as a person. So through talking with his older brother, who's still alive, and I got to spend a lot of time with Lenny, And George and Grammy Connie, I was able to kind of get a sense of what he was really like, understand him as a way to hold on to him, you know, find out about the high points of his life, his hopes and his dreams, but also had very real, interesting conversations about what his regrets were, you know, and his flaws and what he learned from throughout the course of his life.
Oh, and that had to have been fascinating to interview and get other people's perspective, because I would imagine they all had a little twist and turn in each of them.
Absolutely. And that's the funny thing about memory, even for those of us who have it completely intact, is that, you know, memory is not a fixed thing, as I'm sure we all know. And hearing these stories told from these different perspectives, sometimes the details would be, you know, very different. And even, you know, on the bike trip, my brother and I were very close as kids, but also what came with that was a lot of conflict and tension. And, you know, as we're kind of exploring Grandpa Mel's past, we also kind of have to face our own. And so much of the conflict between Kobe and myself, which I'm sure is common among siblings, is memory, and that we have these different memories or different perspectives on memories, different ways that we've hurt each other in the past, things that we're still holding on to. And ironically, as I was, you know, trying to hold on to my grandpa's memories, I was realizing Kobe and I may get along better, hypothetically, if we could let go of some of the painful memories between us.
Sure. And I think pretty much every family has that. And are they willing to discuss it or not is always a whole other matter, you know, in an open fashion. But I mean, what an exploration. Now, when you're putting this whole, you know, trip together and kind of recreating his bike trip. I'm sorry, we've got a little static in the background, and I'm not sure what's causing that at all. So I don't know if
Is
it's our
better.
That yep, that's much better, much better.
Okay. Okay.
On that, so you're putting this path together, and it looked like you and Kobe had taken a picture kind of at the same place where your grandfather had taken a picture and made a stop. Is that correct,
that was the goal. That's kind of the mission of the bike trip is not just go from New York to Philadelphia, but really try to figure out like where exactly he went and find those exact locations that the photos are in, recreate them today. And that was a lot of work and very interesting to realize, oh, that's going to be more difficult than I thought. And there's one photo in particular of my grandfather standing at this road sign that says, you know, 17 miles to Elizabethtown, 13 miles to Red Bank. And we realized, oh, okay, so we just have to find the exact spot that's that many miles from these different towns. And we're spent a year leading up to the trip, researching it on our bikes, on our laptops, finding it on Google Maps, but not being 100% sure if that was going to be the location. So that photo in particular was incredible in South Amboy, New Jersey, finding the exact bridge that had stood so cleanly back in 1945, was now covered in vines, and you could see the cracks on it, and you could, you know, literally see the 70 years of age that had happened. And we had Kobe pose in the exact position that my grandfather was in, and took a photo. And you know, for me, and I think something that like is can potentially be very healing for all of us that are losing a member of a family who has Alzheimer's or just loss in general, is just something about standing in the physical location that we know that they were in, as a way to really kind of experience what it was like to be there. And then also remember, like, we're part of this continuum. And now here we are in that location. And even if they can't be there anymore, I found very personally powerful.
Yeah, did you feel overwhelmed by emotion at any time during the trip? I would think that would just be like, woof.
Absolutely. I think, you know, throughout the making of the film, just watching footage, one in particular that always is hard to watch, but also it's hard to watch because it's painful, but it's also very beautiful. Is I filmed George, the lifelong friend of my grandpa that went on this bike trip with him, visiting Grandpa Mel in the nursing home and seeing their reunion after so many years. And, you know, George is clearly trying to hold himself together and having a difficult time, but was really inspired by his just compassion and empathy he was sharing with Grandpa Mel, and, you know, asking, like, you remember we went on this bike trip, you know, we used to be really good friends. And then when it was clear that my grandpa wasn't going to be able to really share that with him, just George, you know, getting close to him and holding his hand. And as George says, it's like, well, you know, Mel may not remember these adventures we went on, but I do. And I think that's important. And I'm happy to be here for him in whatever condition he's in. And that, you know, that really meant a lot to me, and ultimately taught me, like, what it really means to love someone, and despite them going through the situation, what it means to really be there for that person and not need anything from them if they can't remember.
Yeah, that's true, unconditional love, you know, when you can just be there without any expectation. And those powers of those memories, I know, you know, my mom had dementia for 30 years, Alex, and there were times when going through that process, I thought she didn't know, but I can't tell you how many moments of clarity there were where she was able to respond. And so one of the things that I really learned through my journey was that dementia, as it progresses, I think we have to almost view it like a coma. We've accepted the fact that people in a coma can still take everything in, but they might not be able to communicate back to us. And I saw that profoundly happen so many times. And, you know, it makes me sad when people say, oh, they're just a shell of a body, because I believe they're, you know, their soul still exists and still is connected to us, but we're looking for the wrong signals. We're looking for the real, you know, blatant, you know, where we want those words and those sentences, and we're missing out sometimes on the eyes and the glint or the sorrow or whatever they're showing us, or, you know, the hand movements or just the slightest of a smile, you know.
That's
all
so
those
true.
All those little nonverbals, because we're so busy kind of in our grief and our loss that, you know, we're losing that the present moment that's given to us. And so, you know, for me, the journey was really one of learning to balance that fear of the future and what's all going to come and worrying about it. And then the grief of the loss that can spin. And one of the things that helped me, and I always share this with everybody I speak to, is, you know, you can't have great loss without great love. And that is a gift. And that would always pull me out of that sinkhole. And then, you know, we can only identify and create joy in the moment before us. And so all that you're doing, you know, you're taking this journey down the past to bring it back, to create moments and to educate yourself and just, you know, have this more significant knowing, I think is really, really just profound what you and your brother, you know, committed to do. How long did it take you to take that trip, and how long was it?
Yeah, well, so Mel and George in 1945 did it in 2 days. And it took us 2 weeks because we were going, we had cameras, you know, attached to the bikes and packed up. So every few miles we'd have to get off and set up and everything like that. So ironically, you know, while their trip was kind of this spontaneous, very freeing experience, ours had to be, in order to recreate it, much more planned and scheduled. And of course the landscape has changed quite a bit too. So across New Jersey back then, they were just going through farm fields and forests. For us, it was a lot of suburbs and cities that were less friendly to bikes. In one case, there was a ferry that they took back in the 40s that ushered them across the river that didn't exist for us. And the only way across the river today was a bridge that didn't allow bicycles. So we found a fisherman a fishing with a fishing boat that was willing to for free take us across the river when we told him what we were doing, which we filmed as part of the film, and just kind of a funny way we had to scrape together and make the trip that they took still work for us today in the 21st century.
Wow. Well, that, you know, and that it's neat to see how people pitch in, you know, when you share your story of what you're doing, you know, powerful stuff. And people like to help out and get involved. And I think sometimes we're afraid to ask, but you know, what an uplifting story for him to go home and tell his friends, gosh, I met these two guys.
Yeah, I wonder what.
You know, I think sometimes we underestimate, you know, our power of one and our connectiveness to one another. But I'm sure that's something he went and shared and you know, was just amazed that two, you know, young gentlemen were willing to do this. You know, it's a big commitment, you know, to
I think it's something that, you know, a lot of people can connect with, even if they don't have a family member with Alzheimer's, as we all know what it's like to, have loss. And I think something that I would like to see more in the Alzheimer's community that, this film is hoping to help with is raising awareness in younger generations and kind of having more intergenerational connection. Because I think for folks in my generation, millennials or younger, you know, Alzheimer's is only going to be more of a problem. The numbers are rising, and it's important for us to start getting involved now and being aware. And ultimately, I feel that the most precious thing we can do when our elders are losing their memory is just really try to listen to them and hold on to that. So I hope that other folks are moved to, you know, just remember how limited our time is and that incredible that we have this brief overlap with people in our lives that have experienced more life before us. And ultimately, you know, the film is, I see it as a time capsule for my hypothetical grandchildren, whoever in the future, if one day I'm not able to remember to have this story that is able to share those memories with them, because they'll never get to meet my grandfather. But I was the one that will have been the link between them. And I think, you know, we all are links between these different generations. And the best way we can continue the connection between all of them is making sure that we're really listening to each other and sharing those stories, passing them on.
Exactly. Well, and that's, I mean, you're really thinking forward. And I think the intergenerational connection is so important. I think we need to educate, you know, kids when they're little on this. And it's nice to see there's some books being written about Alzheimer's and dementia for, you know, our young kids on up. I've gone into schools and I've been shocked at how many kids in junior high and high school are taking care of, you know, parents or grandparents or watching out for a neighbor. And there really isn't, one of the things that came out in those conversations was there's no support for them. You know, we've got all these support groups in schools, but there isn't anything for caring for another person. And so some of the teenagers in some of the schools had said, hey, we're going to march in and say we want one too. You know, we've got needs. And they were shocked to find out others were in the same boat as them, because it's just something that a lot of people don't talk about. So I think, you know, I think it's real critical for families to have open conversations. What I heard from many of the kids was, I know something's going on, but I don't really know what. My parents kind of keep me from the details. They asked me to kind of fill in, but I don't really know what's going on. And I see that the sincereness of these kids wanting to help but not knowing how, because they're not totally filled in, and yet their whole family dynamics has been, you know, shaken to the core. And so, you know, when we have these conversations and we can empower everybody, and oh my gosh, you guys have such great creative ideas of things to do and how to manage, and you're more tech savvy than many of us. And I mean, there's just, you know, when we work together, we're just better, you know, that's
absolutely
fine.
Our culture has the different generations and age groups so siloed off, and you know, I feel like we need to make sure that young people are engaging with their elders, not just when they're sick and when they're losing their memories. But one thing that we're going to do with the film when we're for distribution is having community screenings that connect youth groups, colleges, universities with senior centers, with councils on aging, because I want to bring, you know, people of different age groups in the same room to talk about Alzheimer's, but also just to talk about their perspectives on life and getting to so much of the time we're just hearing about each other through secondary sources or stereotypes of what different age groups are like, but really getting to just remember, like, oh, this is a person, for elders to see a young person and remember, like, oh, I was in a similar position, you know, and for young people to realize, like, oh, I'm going, that's going to be me. I will age and I will experience that as well. I would love to continue to bring people together in that capacity.
You know, doing the screenings in that setting is phenomenal. I've done that with the movie His Neighbor Phil, which is now called A Timeless Love. And, you know, when the director brought it to me, he's like, you know, how do we get this out? You know, should we get it on TV? Should we put it on Redbox? Do we sell DVDs? And I said, absolutely none of those. And he's like, well, what's left? And I said, you have a powerful medium here that takes people back, because when they go to see a film, they don't really see it as a learning tool, you know? Mm-hmm. And these films are so intimate. And when you put them in a place where it's safe and supportive, the conversations are brilliant. People talk about things they've never told anybody before to a perfect group of strangers. And they typically want to bring more people back. I mean, I love doing those screenings, because it's just, you know, and then it centers the core kind of support group of in their community, who can they go to, you know, for help, because there's such a disconnect of what do I even need? Who can even help me in this? And you kind of settle them right in that nice little cushion. And it's just, I don't know. I guess I'm just not a big grandiose person, even though I have found that, you know, keeping it simple and making sure that you're truly connecting with the people is powerful. And many still, when they do these screenings of these powerful films, will have a panel of experts. And so after the film, all the experts are doing is talking at the audience instead of engaging the audience to talk to them, because each and every one of them has a story, has a perspective we need to hear, because, you know, the broader our perspectives can be, the better we can meet their needs with services and be supportive and get an idea so easily through storytelling that, you know, each journey is different. Each person with dementia, each care partner, each environment, and it's going to constantly change. That's just life. And if we look at ourselves, that's the way life was before dementia too. We just don't look at it like that. You know, we always think we're in control of everything. And
it's easy to take it for granted.
Yes, perfect. That sums it up really nice. And you don't know what you're missing until it's gone. And this is a way to, you know, to help out the next person in line on the journey and support one another as you walk together, you know, through that. Memory cafes might be a nice place to be able to share that film too.
I've been talking with Dave, who runs it, and we'll be having an article up there about the film and the crowdfunding campaign soon. And yes, definitely, it's a great idea to I think they do a great job bringing folks together exactly how we're talking about. So I would love to bring the film to them too.
Exactly. And then there's so many different dementia friendly communities, and the library systems are really big in getting into this space as well. And so they might be somebody who would sponsor too. So yeah, you never know. It's always have a conversation and see where it leads, you know, because people are connected. And when you touch them on a heart level, they open up their contacts to you then. And
absolutely. And that's something I'm looking forward to, because, you know, in the process of sharing our family's story, as you were saying earlier, it can be isolating, and you don't always know like who else is experiencing it. And through the process of making this and having the campaign and talking with people, just hearing other people's stories and how they've been touched by it, how they've responded, how it's challenged them, you know, has been really meaningful to me and my family. And to just remember like, oh, right, this is something that, you know, a lot of us are dealing with. There's a lot of different ideas on what we can do and how we can hold on to that connection. And I'm excited to continue to meet more people and hear more stories.
Yeah. Well, and, you know, I think so much of, you know, what people expect with Alzheimer's and the various types of dementias is gloom and doom, you know, type B. There's a lot of fear, but there's so much joy, you know, that can be had. But we have to educate people that it's still there, that they're still able to connect, that this can still be a very magical time of life if you choose to look for it, if you choose to create it. And
that's very true. That was true with my family as well, is that, you know, there is definitely the sadness and the loss. But a lot of the times things would happen related to forgetting that are funny. And my grandma would be the first to laugh. And by seeing Grammy laugh, you know, grandpa would laugh as well. And they would really be able to laugh about it together and still just be, you know, silly, make silly faces and play games and just be in each other's company. Yeah, absolutely. Like a lot of the time, there's still that very strong connection that's not just based on having our memory completely there.
Exactly. So in bringing this, are you looking at two colleges, or are you looking at maybe high school and junior high as well? Or
we're editing the film now, and there's about 6 months left is my prediction, and then next year in 2020 we'll be bringing it to high school, colleges, senior centers. And we'll really go all over the country. And through this crowdfunding campaign we've been running, it's been a wonderful opportunity to reach out to people that will be audience members and connect with other folks that are interested in these stories. And a lot of the people that are supporting the campaign today will also be the first ones that we're able to bring the film to and get to share with their communities.
Okay. Wonderful. Well, that is great. Now, in the production state, how long do you think that's going to take you, and what do you, you know, where do you do that, and what is needed in that, you know, for you to be able to complete that?
Yeah, so much of this has been a labor of love, and in independent documentary filmmaking, it usually has to be. And myself and a small team of filmmakers have put in, you know, countless hours into editing the film after, you know, not to mention all of the filming, obviously, and organizing the footage, because there's, you know, over 100 hours of interviews and bike trip, and you have to transcribe that and organize it. Otherwise, it's kind of a maddening, like too chaotic of a process. And now moving forward, we need to raise funds for things that we're not able to do, but helps make the film as quality as possible. Have another editor that has more experience and also can offer an outsider perspective of a story I'm so close to. There's more technical things like color correction and sound design and music scoring and graphics and all that. It's we've taken the film as far as we can on our own, and I still have a lot of energy left to put more of my time and energy into it, but we were at a point now where we really need help from the community to make the story possible. And when we launched the crowdfunding campaign on Seed and Spark just last week in mid-October, the immediate response has been really moving and uplifting, and to see people wanting to help the story being told and contributing and reaching out, talking about, you know, their own experiences has really, really meant a lot to me.
Oh, very cool. Well, that's absolutely fantastic. I just love hearing people's stories and what they're doing and using their talents in their own way. The creativity that is out there is amazing. Now they can go, you've got a trailer that people can watch to kind of get a feel for what you're doing. And
yes.
And we've put that link on the radio page. We've also put the website in your crowdfunding page.
Yes. If you go to, it's seedandspark.com/fund/now and again, which is the name of the film.
Okay. Is it now, cause I've got now and again, and then a pound sign story. Does that need to be there?
Yes.
Or
okay. That works too. They'll take you to the same place.
Okay. I had not heard of Seed and Spark before, so that's great. So what is your goal for raising funds and time frame?
Yeah, the campaign lasts about 30 days, so from October 14th to November 14th. And we've come a long way. There's still more time to go. We're raising $15,000. For the editor, for the color correction, for the sound design. We have a bunch of incentives that the website calls it, you know, these like crowdfunding mm-hmm. campaigns ask for that. So, for example, found this, going through my grandma's basement, helping her clean up, found this kind of treasure chest of these like new condition magazines from the 50s, 60s, and 70s, like Newsweek, Mad TV. There's a Playboy magazines that I think were my uncle's from the 60s. And so by contributing, some folks will be able to get some of those items in mint condition. We also, there's a reward of, you know, behind the scenes of the films. One thing that we thought would be fun is asking the supporters, you know, like, what do you think? Being a part of the process of making the documentary. So being part of our test panel of experts and sending rough cuts of the film and really, you know, asking honestly, like, for your rough feedback. That's if people are interested in that. But yeah, really, you know, we have a Facebook and there's a lot of folks on there. It's at Now and Again Doc. And people have been really generous sharing their stories and we talk a lot about research and ways we can keep our minds sharp. And it's just been kind of slowly building this community of support online.
Okay. Have you, and I don't know if you've ever considered this, but I know some films have and some haven't, but for donors, you know, they get their name listed in some capacity. And for some, it's even more important to have their, you know, maybe a picture of their loved one, you know, just so there's these faces and connections of who's
that's
been
so
affected
true,
by
yeah.
it. So that
yeah,
might
we,
be...
that's a great idea. Cause we do have, contributing will also get your name as a thank you in the credits and, a shout out in that way. But I actually love, that's such a good idea, Lori, to have the photographs of people's loved ones. I love that. I think we might just have to do this.
Yeah, it's I think it's just a powerful thing, and it it cements the deal, because you know the credits go by quick, but you know those pictures, just, you know, as they say, a picture says a thousand words, and it's the power of, you know, who's been affected, because sometimes people think, oh, it's just the very elderly, you know, and there are you know, people in their 30s, 40s, and 50s, we are seeing
early onset
starting to get diagnosed with dementia. I interviewed a couple of people who have lost, you know, 18 and 20 year olds, you know, to this disease. So the face is changing, and it's a reality that we all have to, you know, adjust to. And we have to change the perception of life with dementia. And, you know, there's no cure. There's no true set prevention. There's a lot of, you know, good ideas out there, but we don't really know if they work or not. at this point. And so, yeah, it's a tough one. So we have to learn to live as graciously as possible, you know, with the disease. Alex, are there, you know, I know you had mentioned that you feel that it's important for young people to get involved in the conversation. If you had a group before you right now, what would you say to empower them to step up and get involved?
I think first and foremost is whether your grandparents are still with you or not, there are elders in your life that you can learn from and connect with. And I think the most important fundamental part of Alzheimer's awareness is just creating that intergenerational connection. That doesn't even have to be based on what do we do when someone is beginning to lose themselves to us. So I'd say really working on those connections, whether it's someone in your family, a family friend. And I think that goes both ways. I think, you know, elders, seniors, just adults in general need to remember that, you know, young people have experiences and stories as well. So the curiosity needs to be reciprocal. And I think that is a very powerful way we can bring more people in to have more caretakers and helpful ways to have communities around support for this. And I, of course, you know, there's organizations like the Alzheimer's Association, or Hilarity for Charity is a particularly good intergenerational organization that connects millennials with seniors that are experiencing Alzheimer's. It's run by Seth Rogen, the comedian and actor. So those are great organizations to get involved with if you're interested in doing so in that capacity.
Wonderful. And I guess to families, I would just really encourage you to not isolate your kids and don't leave them out of the conversation. This is a, you know, this disease has a ripple effect through families. And when, you know, kids are kind of the center of attention and then all of a sudden maybe can't be anymore because of circumstances, I personally believe they have a right to know why. And you know, let them get involved. Let them help. They've got a lot of energy. They have a lot of compassion that you might not even know is in there. And so unleash it and come together as a family. I think you will be amazed at what they have to contribute and what you'll learn from them. I think kids are wonderful teachers to all of us. And, you know, sometimes as adults, we have learned to kind of package things up and be in control and not always speak our piece, where our kids will tell us what they see. And,
absolutely.
And I think that that's an important conversation to be had, you know, to be honest about what's going on and how it's affecting. I mean, when I go into schools, they would tell me they could see their parents were exhausted or they were scared or they were frustrated or, you know, that money was tight or they were worried about losing their job for taking off time for work, for maybe doing different things. I mean, they saw all that. They felt all that. And yet they didn't feel like there was anything they could do because the door to the conversation wasn't open. And I think sometimes, you know, we don't need anybody to fix us. We just need to be heard. And, you know, most families nowadays, you know, are all saying that they don't talk as much because of our phones and, you know, the kids are texting or playing a video game or the parents are on their phone, you know, doing work or whatever it might be, but we're all sidetracked from one another. And I think, I really do believe dementia is here to teach us a lesson to come back and have that sense of family and have that sense of community and to bring us to back to a simpler time where it doesn't have to be big and flashy to be important and to have depth. So,
absolutely.
So again, thank you for your work.
Yeah, no, yeah, thank you so much for having me on, Lori. I really appreciate it. I appreciate this podcast and the work that you're doing.
Well, thank you. And again, you can reach Alex. You can go to ashbornfilms.com or their website there. And then you've got the trailer link, and you also have the crowdfunding link, which I think it would be great to help support them and get this film out and, you know, help our intergenerational events move up and connect us when it comes to Alzheimer's and the various types of dementia. I can't imagine how proud your parents and your grandparents are of you doing this whole process. What a commitment. Just fabulous.
Yeah, thank you. Yeah, it's been a really meaningful family project for sure.
Well, good. And thank your brother, Colby, for joining you on that trip too. I'm sure that there's a lot you both learned and are probably still processing, you know,
Definitely.
through this whole thing. And they're the friends and family that opened up to talk to you about your grandfather as well and this journey and all the work your grandma went through, pulling out those pictures and stuff. That had to have been just a heartwarming process for her in a lot of ways, I would imagine. Really touched her
Yeah.
heart. So again, thank you for all your work and keep us posted on how you're doing. And in wrapping up, I'm just going to give a shout out to a couple other organizations. Women's Alzheimer's Movement, which is Maria Shriver's, is going to be doing the Move for the Minds this fall. You can find out more information, but Maria is just such a wonderful, wonderful person and so sincere and is really raising the bar in terms of what's happening regarding the equity position of women versus men being diagnosed with this, and is doing a lot with research. So check out the Women's Alzheimer's Movement.org, and that's the Women's Alzheimer's Movement.org for more information there. I would also recommend you check out the Alzheimer's Research and Prevention Foundation. They just do a lot holistically. So if you're looking for, you know, diet, exercise, meditation alternatives, they do a great job there. And you can just go to alzheimersprevention.com. And again, we appreciate all your likes, your clicks, and shares. And don't forget to head over to alzheimerspeaks.com. You can click on our projects and initiatives tab, where you'll find a lot of great information from memory cafes to becoming dementia friendly and so forth. And then, you know, we've got some resources there for you. Or if you're looking for a speaker, trainer, or consultant, feel free to reach out. We'd love to talk to you. And last but not least, we'd love to have you on the show and hear what your story is. Everybody has one. Thanks so much, everyone. Have a great week. Bye now.
Hi, I'm Lori LeBay, and I wanted to tell you about Alzheimer's Speaks, which is another great podcast. You see, my own mother lived with dementia for 30 years, and I felt lost. Did you know every 3 seconds someone in the world is being diagnosed with dementia? Odds are it's going to hit your families too. We want to help you connect to services, products, tools, research, and stories so you can be prepared. Please subscribe to Alzheimer's Speaks on your favorite podcast platform.